I'm a very at base, pretty anxious. This is why I am high all the time because I'm just like, oh, I need 26 less thoughts at all times.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we've got Dwayne Perkins on the podcast. If my voice sounds weird, it's because I have finally listened to my immune system, which said, fuck you, bitch. Yeah, it's done for. I got very sick after the show ended, after Matt and I went to our Palm Springs vacation, but I'm on the antibiotics, and I'm going to be back in action in no time. Now, Dwayne Perkins is an incredible guest. I actually emailed his people to have him on over a year ago, and I'm so glad it finally happened. If you don't know Dwayne Perkins, he's written for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Amber Ruffin Show. He's been on Comedy Central, Netflix, and his sketch that was on Comedy Central called The Blackening was made into a feature film and is coming out this June, and I cannot fucking wait. I gotta tell you something that is fully insane that happened to me. So we had a great time in Palm Springs. We got back. We were in there for Matt's birthday. And we decided to go out this weekend to Akbar in Silver Lake. And I see this guy that I completely recognize from college. I know I never knew him in college, but I saw him everywhere. So I was like, Matt, I'll be right back. I go up to him. Turns out we went to NYU the same exact time. We lived in the same exact freshman dorm, and we both hooked up with our RAs. Classic. While we're comparing those notes, he says, wait a minute, my friend here also went to NYU. Turns out we were also there at the same time. I unfortunately did not recognize him. However, I asked, where do you live? What part of town and what part of LA are you in? And he tells me, he's around Koreatown. And I say, oh, that's so funny. I'm close to there as well. Ladies and gents, we live in the same building. He lives two floors above me. This very cute, very sweet, lovely gay man who I apparently went to college with also has a little terrier dog. It's been living 20 feet, 30 feet above my gay ass head. God, I love LA and I love being a fagotrini. But let's get into this episode with Dwayne Perkins. If you've not yet seen that sketch called The Blackening, I'll put the link in the show notes. It is so funny. It's about a group of black friends who find themselves in a slasher film scenario. But because usually the black person dies first in those types of movies, they have to decide who is the blackest. It is so funny. It comes out this June. And I truly hope you come with me to see it. In this episode, we talk about the musical Dwayne was rehearsing when he had his first kiss. We talk about how Liv Tyler is mother. And I wait till the end of the episode to ask about his character actress of choice. And the answer, it's not surprising, but it is perfection. Make sure you follow me at Eric Wills. Follow the podcast at Gay Ass Podcast. And enjoy. It is Dwayne Perkins on That's a Gay Ass Fucking Podcast. Dwayne, I don't know if you know this, but I've been wanting you on this podcast since the beginning. I have followed you on social medias. I'm a fan of so many of your proges, and I am so honored and touched that you are here. Thank you for coming on this podcast, Dwayne.
Of course. I'm very flattered. Thank you for having me.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on just moving to a new house, you say. Mazel tov.
Thank you. Yes, I have.
Are you an LA girl?
Yes.
So you have done the impossible, which is find a stunning place to live in the worst time in history to buy a house. Do you have any advice for people that want happiness?
I would say generational wealth and maybe nepotism, because it was way too hard for me because I didn't have those things. It was the worst fucking time.
It really is. Do you have a stance on nepotism babies? Do you feel like they're getting attention that is deserved, or do you think that they should just be able to be famous and have the opportunities without any bad press?
No, I just think that it's kind of goes with it. Similar to as I get more jobs, I feel like there's certain things that I no longer have a hold or claim to. Like, I can't be like me and my broke sisters knowing that I actually have money. Because so yeah, I feel like if you benefit from nepotism, that's kind of the draw. I'd be like, well, people who don't probably gonna be mad about it, but yeah. Like, go cry in your piles of money. Like, I don't know what to tell
literally
you.
Literally, go swim a lap in your daddy's pool is what I would say.
Like, get off social media. Go lay by the pool that you probably have. Like,
literally, I do want to say too that, and I know this is like a fun, silly podcast, but I just want you to know that I really, you are an inspiration to me because you have worked your tush off. You have used your skills in writing and comedy and being gorgeous. And it just like you have done so many things that I aspire to. And so here's my question that I've been talking about in therapy. Ooh. I've been talking about like, okay, so I need to feel successful right now because if something huge happens successfully, career-wise, whatever, a lot of people always want to get to the next thing and they can't feel present in that success. My deep question for you is, have you found, now that you have quote-unquote made it and you have like this huge movie coming out this summer, has your relationship to success or like being present, have you felt like you've been able to stay in the now, or has that been a struggle bus for you?
It's been a struggle because I think that like my definition of success is constantly changing based on experiencing it in real time and mm-hmm. kind of having the expectation or like the dream in my head and then having a side by side to like what the reality was and being like, oh, okay. So this thing that I put a lot of weight on and there was like an emotional bank of mm-hmm. like, oh, I set this aside for when I reach this point, I'm going to like take it all out, withdraw, and then there'll be so much joy because like that is what I have put all of my happiness around on right. this moment. So then I get to that moment and I like withdraw it. But I find at times that I did not take into account when I put the deposit in, how much money I had like in my pocket. So it was like, oh, if I'm empty, opening up that bank that I like thought was a dream, it mm-hmm. kind of taints the experience. I found to be like, oh, like there is still like a real worldness to this dream that like I put a lot around. So I've been really trying to focus on like finding happiness from that moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, like what about, like what am I happy about right now versus what I'm judging the person I was like years ago when I made this goal? Like, I'm really trying to like leech off of that person.
Yeah, because if you're just basing yourself on like the future icon you hope to be, it's never going to measure up to like the person in your past who's probably so in awe of what you're doing mm-hmm. now. And my therapist also talks about like we have, you know, so many banks in our lives, like career bank, mm-hmm. like family, emotional, whatever it is. And like I have tried as I've like, you know, got into my... Well, I don't feel or think I'm old at all, but like once I'm now in my 30s, early to mid 30s, it's like, okay, the career bank is important, but it is not every fucking thing. Like I consider the fact that this has been my first year in LA. I've had a huge uptick of like gay friends, gay experiences. And so like my gay bank, I would say she's the number, there's a lot of zeros in my gay bank. Mm-hmm. And that's something that doesn't count for nothing.
Overflowing. Like that is something, truly.
How is your gay bank doing right now?
Good. Like I've also recently found like a really nice group of like gay Black men that I am so infatuated with in such a like earnest way. They're all just like so kind and so sweet and so like beautiful. And I'm just like, wow, this is so nice. And they are in the industry and we're all like doing it. And because of the struggles that we've all had, we all know like, oh, we're in this together. Because like, girl, we don't make none of these decisions.
Right. Well, do you then find with this group of gays that it's because you have like the industry connection and the gay connection, the friend connection, are you able to go like on a group trip with them and then be able to let loose and have fun? My fantasy is to have a group of gays and go to like Palm Springs. And I haven't done that yet, but that's my next goal.
Okay, so like this group of people, like they've gone on trips and I've seen it. Like I wasn't like in the group yet. And so like, and I've been like told like, hey, we're going on this thing. But I'm like, oh, I have 20 things that I have to do. And so I just haven't been able to like prioritize friendship in that way, but that is a goal of mine, is to be able to like indulge and like fellowship in like a very like deep way. Because
that's the like the bank that we're talking about. It's like, okay, so now you're maybe gonna move some money from one bank and then put it into the gay friend group bank, and that might be a trip to Antigua.
Yeah, could be. I'm like, I've never been to Mexico. Like, let's go.
all the dolls talk about Puerto Vallarta as like the gay place in Mexico, and it sounds fun and overwhelming. I would need to go. I think I'm a bit of a scary Mary when it comes, like, I would need my hand held while the foam is going around me in the bubble party. You know, like, I can't, like, I would not go with, I would only go with people who have done it before and know Puerto Vallarta well.
Yeah, same. I'm not, I'm a very, like, at base, pretty anxious for the most part. And this is why I am high all the time. Because I'm just like, oh, I need 26 less thoughts at all times.
You and I have that in common, because that is why I partly love LA so much, is the lack of judgment and the acceptance and the appreciation and the encouragement of a THC helpful moment. Like, I am trying to really find a balance of A, having tolerance, B, being productive, and C, still really enjoying it. And I have, but I've been getting into pre-rolls recently, and there's something about a blunt high that just tingles my body and stops the thoughts. The edibles, I was doing so much, and then my sleep got a little weird. So what is your TOC, your THC of choice?
It's like a balancing act. It's like waivers, because I also am like, I don't want to get too dependent on like one thing.
Right.
And I also am very easily grossed out by things. So like, I don't like bad smells. I don't like things that, if things are too like gross to my, to like the touch, I'm like, this is disgusting. I don't want in my body. And so I've been like vaporizing. I like a lot of, I buy like very high-tech things to be like, I want to like, because I do enjoy weed, I'm like, what is the like best, safest way to consume this? Also, like, I don't like coughing. I don't want my chest to hurt. It's like very like high maintenance.
You're a high maintenance pothead. Wait, so what's the best way to do it? I'm so intrigued.
So right now I'm really into breath spray. Yes, it's minty and it's very like discreet. It'd be like, oh, I'm gonna freshen my breath, squirt squirt, bitch, I am on drugs. Like, it is my favorite.
And one can find this at just like a regular, like, old cute,
like they're 1,000 milligrams and each spray is 5 milligrams.
Stop it.
I need to get a partnership with Breeze, because
literally,
let me tell you,
is it called, you said Breeze?
Yeah.
And the marketing is good. I mean, what a great
name. It's very cute. It has a cute packaging.
Watch me completely start hounding down the Breeze marketing people and be like, use code ERIC20 for...
Also, it's like very easy to like share. I've been like, oh, hey, like, let me give you like a little squirt, and not like, hey, put your mouth on this thing.
Especially in the era of like the three pandemics that are like swirling around. Wow. The more you know with Dwayne Perkins. That's honestly a spray, and it's one spray is 5 millis. I don't know. Yeah. Are you a one spray girl?
Oh, I'm a, depending, it truly goes from like 7 to 12.
Wow, good for you.
But sometimes it's like a two spray. I'd be like, oh, I have like a meeting, and I'm just like, I'm nervous, and I like want to be like less nervous, or like, I'm at the gym. I'd be like, oh, like, I don't need to be like really high.
But just a little buzz.
Yeah, just like a little taste. And mainly because I don't like drinking.
Yeah,
like,
same.
When I'm in social spaces and it's just like nothing but drinking, I'm like, well, I might as well be
might
on some
well
level.
Spray,
that's
spray,
not...
squirt, squirt, bitch.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm not joking. You have completely revolutionized my to-do list when it comes to weed, and I will be squirting to Murraying. So that brings me then to a very important podcast question, which I have to ask you, Dwayne Perkins. Yes. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
You know what? I have thought about this question personally for a long time. And you really like diving back to like the moment that I like really felt in my body, like, this is different. There's something unexplainable here, and I don't know what it is. And it was the movie Armageddon.
You know what's so crazy is I'm having like a sense memory because I too had feelings watching Armageddon. Were you in the theater when this happened? Or were you like at a VHS home video moment?
It was VHS at home. Mm. I remember I was at home watching it with my family. And it was the moment where Bruce Willis like tricks Ben Affleck into like going back so that he could be with his daughter. And Ben Affleck is yelling, "I love you." Oh. And I remember being like, I'm feeling something that I don't think and then within like the context of my family of being like, oh, I don't know how to like even if I would like explain what I'm feeling, there is something here that I'm like, ooh, I feel it. And like it, like something like awoken me, like, ooh, yeah. Okay, all right.
Well, it's kind of like in Love Actually, I feel it in my fingers. It's very like, looking at photos right now from this movie, and there's a picture of Bruce Willis and some other actor named Will Patton, who I'm sure he has a great career. They're wearing like astronaut-y militant outfits, and sorry, not sorry, Bruce Willis could step on me. There's also Liv Tyler. I can't explain why, but there's something watching her on screen. Maybe it was the pillowy lips, maybe it was knowing in the back of my head that she was a nepotism baby. I felt this like she is mother energy, and I'm not exactly sure why, but maybe because she was so naive and so beautiful, and it just cuts to Ben Affleck looking chiseled and hot as hell.
I was like, that was like a part, like I was a kid at that point where I was truly like blind to like, you know, systemic oppression and life. And I remember being like, we have to save this white woman's happiness. Like, that is important. And that's why Bruce Willis sacrificed his life for his daughter. I'm like, wow, this little white girl, like, wow. And then that whole song, I'm like, wow, like her happiness is truly. And this is why I think like this is the power of TV and film.
Yes.
And you trick this little black boy to be like, no, white women are the priority.
The white woman's happiness
are number one.
Trumps all.
White men are willing to die for the feelings of this white woman.
Listen, Armageddon, whatever the propaganda was, it sold the message very strongly.
I mean, can't you believe
it worked? And that was a 1998 film. So you and I think, are like pretty close in age. So it's a very important time in a young child's life to learn priorities, to learn pop culture. I mean,
yes, I was seven and eight that year.
Wow. Don't you feel that? I feel like Armageddon had a chokehold on culture for a while. Wasn't that like a huge, I feel like Armageddon and like the Apollo movies, Apollo 13, mm-hmm. Apollo, like there was a big infatuation with space and Liv Tyler.
Yes. It felt like everybody was like, wait, there's more than Earth. And then they were like, we have to explore the space.
That's why when the movie Nope came out, I was so excited to watch it, because I feel like it had been a minute since we had gone to other lands. And like, remember, not only were there these like important movies of Armageddon, but also like Mars Attacks, super campy.
I loved Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks. I
was like, Ray J, wow. America's, oh, he was, to me, like back then, like my Keke Palmer. Like, hey, he's doing it all.
And then the old straight man got a little Tom Jones moment. It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. And then the young gays got the fucking slutty alien women, and they're like, they put him in perky tits.
And their hair was very sculpted.
Oh my god, yeah. And the makeup was stunning. And then like once the lip was pulled back, you saw machinery, which I guess in a queer lens was saying that we're all trying to put a gorgeous face on, but underneath it we're just machines.
Yes, we are all masked individuals.
Oh wow, look at this film critic podcast now that we're
doing. I would say I watched Independence Day this year.
I was gonna say that too.
Independence Day, and I
you
was like,
did
and I was like, fuck, Will Smith was every, I was like, shit,
everything.
He was hot and like I was like, oh, I see why he was like the biggest star. Also the movie, so action-packed.
Yeah. Movies, you know, movies back then knew what they were doing. I mean, like, it truly, like, what I think these movies that we're talking about, they're in some category that needs a name, but it's like, it's essentially, they needed to check off every single box, and they did. Hot male lead, white woman we are supposed to be concerned for her happiness and well-being. Action explosions, aliens, crazy big machinery and ships and planes for the men's to feel included. It just like it somehow pleased queer boys and my straight brothers alike.
This is my theory of why like movies like that aren't as made now, because I realize now as a grown up, like a brain who thinks way too critically about everything, they were just all like propaganda. And I think it's just like, and now people are like, well, like we know too much about the military. Like,
that's true.
Too many things have been revealed.
If a movie came out and it was like, look how hot these military guys are, we'd be like, I don't think that's a story that.
And that's why only like Tom Cruise can like make Top Gun, because he's Tom Cruise and he's like, truly. Yeah, Top Gun. But like regular people are not out here being like, I want to make Pearl Harbor 2.
No, Pearl Harbor does not need a sequel.
But they have a fantastic soundtrack. Oh my God.
Oh my God. True. I will say I was on a plane recently and there was this woman who was in the section next to me. It was one of those like big, like three seats, then a three seat section, then a three seat.
I love those planes.
I think I was actually flying to Chicago, if you can believe it. So the middle section, this woman was just across from me in the aisle, and she was reading from a Hebrew prayer book. She was, I don't think, like, Orthodox wearing a wig, but she, like, as a Jewish person, I love to, like, try to judge what level of Judaism she is. And so I was like, I was going to say, like, either modern Orthodox or, like, high conservative religion. And so she was praying and reading her like Siddur or whatever she had, and then she puts it down and she turns a movie on. It was Bradley Cooper in American Sniper, and I just loved the juxtaposition of like this devout Jewish woman then watching Bradley Cooper rail some woman in American Sniper. I think that proves that they have tried to make those movies, and I guess American Sniper did well. I did not see it. I hope that doesn't offend anyone. Okay, good. And then, but then she sees this like devout religious woman. You know, it's the equal it's the, what is it? The equalizers that everybody wants to see a hot movie star dick down.
That's the true universality of cinema.
You're I agree. Like,
did I watch Jason Bourne? Uh-huh.
I mean Matt Damon is I feel like a very divisive figure these days, and I don't want to get too controversial, but especially because there's been so much award season talk, like I want to thank you for, you've been retweeting a lot of my first college friend, she's having a huge moment, Stephanie Hsu from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. She,
I know all the buzz going around her for the Oscars. What do you see in the future for Will Smith's relationship to the Oscars, and because I know that he has a really big movie coming out, do we think that with time he's going to be eligible, public opinion will shift, what do we guess is going to happen?
Yes, I think it would just all go back to regular the moment he makes more money for people.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, like, I was like, this is a controversial question. You're like, the answer is yes.
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, based off what I've experienced, I'm like, things are less controversial when you just really understand that people are not good and then move with that. Like, ain't nobody out here trying to be good for good's sake. That's rare. Like, when you get that, you're like, oh yeah, that's a special person. But like, it's just like, yeah, money, this is a business, people gonna do whatever makes the most money. So right. If people don't make people money, they're gonna be like, that's come, true, and they're come back over here.
Yeah, and they're going to forgive him and make sure the public forgets. Did you see any of the recent videos going around of Jennifer Lopez? They've been, people have been saying, like, who is the meanest celebrity or the rudest? And a lot of people are saying that, speaking of Ben Affleck in Armageddon, when Ben and J-Lo are together a couple times maybe, Ben Affleck has gone to tip someone, give them a really big tip, and J-Lo comes and snatches it, takes it away, and then gives them a five. When you hear that story, does it surprise you, or are we just agreeing that everyone is bad and when they're not, it's just an exception?
I mean, I think that is very humorous. If that's like real, of like, and if I was ever in an experience where like that happened to me, I would laugh in that famous person's face. I'd be like, Jennifer Lopez, like, girl, what? Like, this must be a bit. Like, this is crazy.
But please tell me this is a bit of
I love bits. I'm like very bit for it. Like, yeah, let's do bits. And the bit of like a very rich person snatching money, like that is very comical, because you're like, that's too on the nose. Like, you can't actually be this person. So that's hard to believe that she would do that.
I know.
But if she did in true, like, earnesty, still hilarious. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe she got a very weird relationship with money.
Maybe she has, like, one of the richest people in the world, but still has scarcity mindset.
Yeah. And like, I don't know.
Who are we to judge her trauma?
I know. She grew up in the Bronx. I don't know her experience. So, like, I don't know. But also, yeah, people are bad. Maybe.
Yeah. Do you have there been any... I'll ask the nice question. Have there been any people, either celebrities or just very like highly renowned, respectful people that have surprised you in a really great way of how down to earth they are? Are there any like goodies that you've met?
Yes. I really like Tim Story, the director of The Blackening. And he has like his movies have grossed over like $1 billion. He's just like have done a lot with a lot of people.
And yet he's still super nice.
The night, like, and he has returned every single text. Like, I told him, because I'm not, I didn't ask. Like I said, you're going to be my mentor because that's the way I move in the world.
Hell yeah.
And damn, he was good. Like, okay. And then he just be answering all my questions in like the nicest, sweetest way. He's just a very supportive person.
I love that you asked for what you wanted. Take two. You named what you needed and the universe delivered.
Yeah, I agree. I also met Lupita at a party once and we danced and she was just like we were like dancing, like just like, and she was like, wow, you're really good at dancing. And I was like, you are too, girl. And we were just like dancing in a way. And then we like talked and it was just like very down to earth and fun. And I was like, girl, do you know who you are?
Do you know who you are, Lupita? I can imagine she is just incredible in every sense of the word. I'm jealous of your dance story because years ago I was at a party where I have told the story before, but Zachary Quinto was at this and I was like, I was young enough to be naive and think that any gay person would want to give another gay person the time of day. And so I kept trying to like make eye contact and dance with him, and he was decidedly very not into me. However, one day Zachary Quinto, I would love to dance to the cha-cha slide at the least with you, a bar mitzvah or otherwise.
Have a moment.
Yeah.
I also met Stephanie at TIFF.
Oh, we love. I mean, because by the way, this whole TIFF thing, you showed The Blackening. You, of course, there was a bidding war, and now it is going to be in theaters June 16th. You know, yes. I'm going to be fucking there, front row. I also want to shout out the who you wrote the movie with has written one of my favorite movies. It's Tracy Oliver. She wrote Girls Trip.
Yes.
I think there is something about that movie that if I had been a young closeted gay boy seeing that, I would have been forced to come out because no one would have guessed I was straight by how much I was talking about Regina Hall.
Oh my God. Yes, I am.
Honestly, I think in the scary movie franchise is what pushed me out of the closet further because I remember Anna Faris recently, I think, said like she would do another scary movie with Regina, like if the money was there. Like, there were you a scary movie girlina?
Yes, I was. And that, and Brenda was truly like, for me, like it like resonated because also she like represented like a lot of girls that I grew up with. I'm like, yeah, these are my family members, these are my sisters. And she, the comedic timing, the gist in that movie, she was just like a shining star that I was like, who yes. is this? And I didn't know her before that, except as Monica's sister on Love and Basketball.
Oh,
and so wow. I was like, oh, that's the girl from Love and Basketball. And now she's hilarious. In a scary movie, too. She was even like better.
Yes.
In a scary movie. Like, she just like kept getting, and everything I saw her in, she was just like never not amazing. So I loved her from.
I would love to know her journey. Like, a dream. She would obviously be a dream guest for this podcast because she is so uniquely herself, but she's done such a crazy wide range of movies that I think is like, obviously I know she's been working for a long time and it's taken it takes so much work and time to get to this point. But if she doesn't have an Oscar vehicle that is like the Regina Hall movie, I would end it all. I think she deserves the world.
I agree. I watched, I went to the premiere for Honk for Jesus, and there is like a monologue that she does at the end that I was like, damn. Like, if that movie I feel like she should have gotten recognized more for it, because her performance was truly fantastic.
Well, I also want to, this reminds me of all these ideas that we have for either Regina Hall or all of our icons. You tweeted a show idea you have that's called You Want to Die on This Hill. It's a show, quote, where I challenge people to defend an opinion they made in a tweet. If their defense is sound, they win money. But if I can prove their opinion is fucking stupid, they lose and literally die on a hill. It's Squid Game plus Z-Way. I mean, Squid Game plus Z-Way is all I need to hear. I think especially this is good to put on Twitter too, because there are so many people that tweet opinions that they like hold so fast. And it's like, how do you have this much energy to even care?
I mean, like, just like critically thinking, I'm just like, when did your thought process stop? Like, just think three more thoughts and you would see that that is fucking stupid. Like, that doesn't make sense. And there's a lot of I've had therapy since I was a very small child, because I had a speech impediment and it was a whole thing. So like, I just have really, also I couldn't talk. So like I've just been forced to listen my whole life. Just been like, okay, I really have to think about what I'm going to say, because I literally sometimes cannot say it. So like there's a very intentionality in which I speak.
Yeah.
And so when people just like say things, I'm just like, you didn't think about that. Because I know how it would have worked if you thought about it. Because I just thought about it, and that's stupid. I literally just thought about like, okay, well, A plus B, well,
right.
Plus C,
right,
changes that, and you just stopped at B. Why'd you stop?
Maybe they probably stopped at A sometimes. I think it's sometimes people who too never, and like, yes, it's probably a lot of like straight white men who were never told that they needed to stop and think, or they felt that they owned the world, and so they only go out with their first thought, and then I mean, obviously there are so many problematic people that are not just straight white men, but I feel that whenever I see it represented in a movie, or that's partly why I didn't watch American Sniper, that's partly why I recently saw the new Avatar movie, and while of course it's beautiful, the, you know, animation, the 3D stuff was cool, there's like, I had a distinct experience of watching the villain of the movie, I guess you would say, who's this like really straight dude that's just like a military bro and like whatever. There's a flashback to whatever. And I remember feeling like, this is partly why I don't like these types of movies, is because I'm being confronted with the thing that I like the least, which is a straight man who not only needs to make you feel like less of a person because you're not a straight man, or make you, or like, what's the word when they like, not infantilize, but like, I grew up with so many douchebaggy straight guys. And so when I see that represented as a trope or a character in a movie, my instinct is to not want, it's to disengage, because that's what I had to do growing up. And so like, I think that's why the blackening, that's why the Regina Hall roles, that's why, I mean, any fucking character actress, like I, and especially we as gay people, gravitate towards that, because we don't want to watch the people who are the ones being a dick to us growing up. That's my soapbox about that. I don't know how I got there, but thank you for listening.
No, like, I also think in terms of just like who's been able to create, at some point, those tropes are just like overdone.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like I've experienced it and I've seen it. It's just like, oh, just in terms of storytelling, that narrative is stale to certain people based on their identities, because they've experienced a certain level of something. And that is why movies that tend to be created by diverse people are just more interesting, because it's literally just a different point of view that you have not seen.
Right.
Like, oh, right. Like that villain will simply be different because the person that created it would be different.
Exactly. And I think that's why it's so exciting to see you and so many people that I look up to, like creating stuff. But you did say something that really is interesting to me, that you've been in therapy for a really long time, especially with speech therapy and everything. Did you, when you came out, were you, had you been in therapy? Did it influence your coming out experience? How old were you?
I was 17 when I came out.
And was it something that you had talked about in therapy, or was it something that you were doing on your own inner monologue?
It was not, because I still was not trustful of like the system of therapy. And I assumed that like being gay would kind of reverberate in every aspect of my life. And so it was something that I felt like siloed off to. So most of my therapy was around like my feelings, because the assumption was that my stutter was like a trigger from something else. So by the time I was in high school, I was like pretty rejective of it. So I was like, I don't want to keep doing this. Like people are like, I had like a, what is it? Like a counselor that would like have to do check-ins and be like, hey, and we have to like meet. And he like find me in the hallway and I'd be like, stop talking to me. Like people are going to think like, I'm like not normal. So it was just me kind of like being like, oh, like I have, because I've been doing this, I have like tools that I've like perfected to where essentially people cannot, like they don't know that I have this disability, so to speak. And so I was pretty much like trying to hide that as well. And so
wow. that's layered because I think that as an adult, I have clung to therapy because it's been the like thing that buoys me from all of my either like own stuff or traumas from life. But I can imagine that as a younger person, especially if you're like trying to overcome a stutter or whatever it is, that if you feel like it's being put onto you, it's a completely different relationship to it. And in a way, I'm kind of thankful that I found therapy myself, because if it had been, although I'm just having a flashback to when I came out to my mom when I was 18, she had me go to a therapist just to like talk to someone to make sure I was okay. And I told the therapist everything that I was feeling, and he was just like, yeah, you seem okay. And then I just stopped going. But I do remember wondering if I was being sent to therapy because something was wrong with me. But I do give my parents the benefit of the doubt that it was just a way to help me work through it. And I am grateful for that. But I can imagine that as a 17-year-old with all the therapy you'd been in, it would probably, it's almost like putting it on its head because you didn't want to talk about your being gay in therapy. Had you kissed a boy by the time you had come out, or did that happen after?
No. My very first kiss was like the summer after I came out.
Summer loving.
Yep, I was doing a musical.
I feel like statistically speaking, that is how so many gay boys have their first kiss. What musical was it? Do you remember?
It was West Side Story. I was a jet, he was a shark. And then we were like, it was truly like the gay, like I've written a show about it. It's pretty, like it, that show is like very special to me for that reason.
Oh, I would 100% watch that show. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to keep that in the hopes and wishes for the future.
Yes.
Speaking of, you're also working on Clue, the animated series.
Yes.
Did you?
Story.
Oh my God, look at it. This is all coming back. Did you say that you went to college for animation?
Yes, I have a degree in it.
What in the hell? Well, that's amazing. So what does that mean for people that are dumb like me?
Yeah, so I went to school. It was like half film, half art. So the first 2 years I had to go to film school. I had to like learn how to be on sets and direct and do all this stuff, which was very fun. And then the last 2 years were very art-based. So I had specialties. I picked hand-drawn like a dumb bitch. It was so much work. so much drawing. And then my senior final was a stop motion, which was also so much work. I am ambitious in a very unhealthy way.
That's why we sprayed THC down our throats.
Exactly. Well, we would go crazy. That's...
And then you now are working on the Clue animated series. You're also an executive producer on the Sausage Party series, Foodtopia. Just so much. I saw Sausage Party in theaters, and I'm obsessed with it. I grew up with like the most like rank, crass senses of humor, and to see like an animated film that is just like so like all like cute foods, and then they're just like
just doing and saying the worst shit.
The worst shit. It's up my alley.
I would say of like the jobs I've had, It's a very fun job. And I was, and I hope this doesn't sound bad. The showrunners, I was like, okay, these four straight men, how's this going to be? I've had issues with this in the past. And they were truly the kindest, sweetest men. And I was like, I love when experiences like force me to stretch my point of view of being like, okay, you can't judge everybody. And I really love like being proved like, no, like chill. Like, yes, you've gone through stuff. You've experienced people. And that is true to your truth of like your lived experience of like, yes, you have like walls up. Those defenses are justified.
Yes. But
I love when a person is able to like break down a part of it and being like, oh, I'm like, yes, please. Yes. I want to be as open as possible. And meeting people that really give you the opportunity to let down those walls, I think are like what makes life like exciting.
And if we may, it's rare that I actually say nice things about straight men. However, there are the ones that, like you're saying, that defy expectation, or they have worked through the societal requirements of being an asshole, and they have become, like you're saying, these like self-aware, welcoming, open people. I have a couple of straight guy friends in my life who know who they are, and it is a healing experience to work or be friends with a
it really takes
it takes a certain straight guy to actually form a close either working relationship or friendly relationship with a queer person, because you need to have a sense of safety when you're friends with someone or work with someone. And I think that to the ones who are the good ones, I raise my glass. I drink to you.
Yes. I literally saw a tweet and I don't remember the exact words, but it was like talking about like the gay straight friend. I'd be like, oh yeah, like that's my straight friend. Like he's not gay, but like, He gets it. And I would say the experience of filming The Blackening, I was like very nervous for this reason to be like, okay, I'm going to have to like interact with like new straight men. Yeah. I have not like openly put myself in environments where I interact with straight men daily. Like I don't have a lot of interactions. And purposely, because I'm like, oh, I go to spaces where I purposely feel as safe as possible, and experiences of being my little gay ass is not normally in those spaces.
Right.
And when I met these three men, Melvin Gregg, Cinqua Walls, and Jermaine Fowler, I was like, okay, what is this going to be? And truly, I loved these men so much. Like me and Melvin Gregg, we had like a moment on set where I like went up to him and I was like, hey, so, because we were talking about like first impressions and like how, and he was like, we're good now, but like you were kind of cold. And I was like, honestly, I was.
Confirmed.
That was the energy that now in hindsight, I have deeply thought about and unpacked. And I told him like, you just reminded me of like the guys that I grew up with. And I like had like some unchecked trauma that I did not realize until like we had to interact. And every experience I've had with you has been truly so kind, so loving. And it has like forced me to like really look at myself and like deal with that. And I'm so grateful for you. And he was like, oh my God, like, thank you for like telling me that. And he said something similar about being around like me. And we just had like this moment. And I was like, wow. Now I go to his house and I like know his like family.
I think that's so very nice. Sweet
and like earnest.
It's also like a very grown up conversation too, because don't you feel that that game of what was your first impression, it statistically can go to some scary places. Like, I thought you were such a fucking bitch. Like sometimes like when you hear that, you're like, wait, like, but in your conversation, it's actually unpacking some pretty deep stuff about the guys you grew up with. And then you thought he was going to have that similar energy. I know that I do the same thing when there's just a certain wall you have to put up when you're in a position or with a group of people who you don't feel are going to celebrate who you are. And I think that's partly why the straight people who don't get it, it's so hard for them, because they've never had to worry about the space they're in. Like they don't, because their space is the norm. But something that we understand inherently is like having to like change who you are to feel safe or accepted or whatever it is. Like I had a dream the other day about being back in high school, and I'll just say it didn't feel good. Like there, I do not miss 1 second of pretending that I wasn't gay. You would have to pay me, what dollar amount would you have to be paid to go back in the closet as your teenage self for like a month? How much would you have to be paid to do that?
I mean, quite a bit. Like I was just talking to a friend about this, but like when I was like pretending to be sure, like what that meant. Mm-hmm. And just, I wrote this one man show called How Being Black and Gay Made Me Better Than You. And it's all about how the particular intersection, like race and sexuality, like created barriers and like struggles that I had to work through. And now that I'm an adult and kind of comparing like the like mental exercises in which all of my counterparts have gone through, I'm like, oh, y'all were not forced to like do these things because you didn't have to. Like even like not being able to like speak and knowing like the mental processes of like, oh, in order for me to literally speak, I have to like check certain things. And now it's like just a habit, but, like having to like grow a muscle to like do these things and just kind of recognizing how like the othernesses and our identities creates a lane of experience that creates a path of knowledge. And if you did not experience that, you simply do not have that knowledge.
It gives you a depth. It makes you better than other people. It gives you like a creative lens that they don't have. And I think we are reaping the benefits from all the work that you have done to create these hilarious and amazing projects. And I think you are better than everyone else. Well, then that means you are perfectly equipped to answer one of our final podcast questions, which is, Dwayne Perkins, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Baby, we've already talked about this. It's Regina Hall. Like 100%. I had this answer already. And then when you brought it up, I was truly like, yeah.
Oh my God.
This is why she would be saved.
It is a gorgeous answer. So you really, I mean, Regina deserves.
And I would say like for a long time, I felt very disconnected with the kind of like the trope that like gay men in their connection to like character actresses, it was always truly just like a slew of white women that I was like, who are these white women? Like, what's this? But now I get it. Like, I'm like, okay, yes.
When you find the character actress that speaks to you, I think it does unlock an understanding of the fact that you would die for her.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like I see the power that you have, and it's bigger than me.
it is bigger than you. It is bigger than us. I mean, one of the reasons why I've gravitated towards that idea is that my first true feeling of acceptance or being seen was because of Whoopi Goldberg and Sister Act 2. It like that I was 11 or 12, and my closest friend, who is still one of my closest friends, they are a queer icon, and they showed me that movie, and we watched it every single weekend for months, because I think we both saw something in Whoopi who saw something in us. Like it was a weird safe space, it's so sad to me that we have to end this episode in a second, because you're a legend and a delight and such a star. So with that in mind, even though I always try not to bring up any of her movies before I ask this question, but I did not prep you on this final podcast question. But Dwayne, what is, in your opinion, the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
For me, impact wise, I do think it's Sister Act 2. I think that there was like something in the like DNA and the sauce of like having the history of Sister Act 1, like that was a moment. And then I'm like, okay, like it really dived into her, and then take kind of really giving that space to like this generation of like young kids, like it really like hit like the zeitgeist in like a very hard way. Where like the day before, I was at a friend's house and Joyful Joyful played, and we were doing the choreography. Like, it's like just a stamp. It's like historic. It's iconic.
It is all those things. I think till the day I die, I will perk up if I hear that song, if I hear Oh Happy Day. And the fact that I, as a young Jewish boy in the Midwest, was like, you know, scream singing about Jesus Christ, only Whoopi Goldberg could do that. And I salute her.
She is the great equalizer.
She really is. And Dwayne Perkins, I am so thrilled you came on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Before we say goodbye, where can people follow you?
Ooh, you can follow me on Instagram at Dwayne K. Perkins. DEWAYNE.
We love to see it. And of course, you have got to go with me to see The Blackening. I just know that the movie is going to be everything and more. And I'm so excited for you and grateful you came on, Dwayne. You're a star. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.